You are Locked On Rockies, your daily Colorado Rockies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Rock on, Rockies fans. Welcome into another episode of the Locked On Rockies podcast. I am your host, Paul Holden, and today we are joined by a very special guest that I will introduce in just a moment, a longtime friend and coworker of mine and Cincinnati sports expert, Lucas Moore, joins us today. Before we get to proper introductions, today's episode is brought to you by Locked On MLB. Join walking baseball encyclopedia Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, every day on Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors, both present and past, featuring exciting guest interviews, routine check-ins from the Locked On MLB Network's team of local experts, and insightful analysis of the day's biggest stories. Locked On MLB is the single best source for daily baseball talk. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. And this is Lucas Moore. And Lucas is a good friend of mine. We've worked together for a few years before we both went on to our own things, ended up in the same city for a bit. But now we are joined via the internet to talk about the Reds and the Rockies, a conversation we've had many, many times. But Lucas, before we get to that, why don't you introduce yourself and let the people know what your allegiance to Cincinnati is?
Well, the allegiance is strong from a childhood perspective. And I covered Cincinnati sports while I was at WATH in Athens, which is where you and I work together. WATH, WXDQ, however you want to say it. But covered Cincinnati sports there. And then the year after I graduated school, and now I'm covering Cincinnati sports for both the Cincy Chronicle, which is a brand new website that's just kicking off, and the 3 a.m. Coney, which is a podcast I have. It's more of a fan style. We get a little more angry and more excited and less analytical on there, which is really why I was excited to come and Locked On today, because I love all the Locked On stuff and you guys really focus on the dynamics of the game and the actual game. And a lot of times on the Coney, we're just kind of, you know, just trying to talk some smack and that type of stuff. So, you know, excited to talk about my lovely 2005 throwback Cincinnati Reds today, because it's exactly what it is. So, but thankfully I get to talk on Locked On Rockies, so I can feel like, hey, you know, maybe it's been a great weekend, right?
Yeah. For you, it's been a great weekend. Not so much, for us Rockies fans. We're recording here in the middle of the game of game three, top of five. The Rockies have bases loaded with a full count and strikeout swinging. That's usually how it goes there with the Rockies. They just can't do anything on the road. So Lucas, let's start with the season so far for the Reds, and we'll talk a little bit more about this series, but this season there was, I think, a lot of expectations for the Reds, and it kind of was rocky to start, but now back to 500 ball and the offense still seems to be coming alive. What have you seen from the 2021 Reds? I know a throwback to 2005 you mentioned. What makes you say that?
Well, I wrote an article for Cincy Chronicle about the similarities between this team and the 2005 Reds. That was a few weeks ago, so the statistical similarities have changed a little bit, but essentially it's two very good outfielders who carry a lineup to one of the best lineups in the league and an absolutely horrific pitching staff top to bottom. That's what the 2005 and 2006 Reds were. If you remember, it was Adam Dunn in left,
right,
Ken Griffey in right. You had Ryan Friel playing center. You had a lot of good bats, like Austin Kearns would come in there. They were a great team. They could hit the ball. They could score a lot of runs, but their ERA was at 5.3, 5.4, 5.5. And that's kind of the same situation the Reds found themselves in, which is interesting because you wouldn't have expected it to be this extreme at the start of the year. I kind of thought they were going to be middle of the pack in both pitching and hitting because they let go of Bauer, and I didn't think that Winker and Castellanos were going to be two of the three best hitters in the game this year, which kind of makes me worry about the back half of the Reds season because I don't know where we go from here. Is Winker and Castellanos going to be above 1,000 OPS the whole year? If that's true, maybe they can hang around 500, and if they get the starting pitching on a roll, maybe they can make a playoff push. The saddest thing about this team, though, Paul, is when we look back at where they are now and what they need now, they could use two bullpen arms. The two bullpen arms they dumped at the start of the year in Archie Goodwin and Rossiel Iglesias for salary. Mm-hmm. Because the Reds have been hemorrhaging money for the last 5-6 years because their attendance has been going down. The pandemic kicked in. The Castellinis got a little tight in the pockets and they wanted to dump some salary. And now the number one thing they need is the thing they could have had for about $13 million this year. And if they had those two guys added to this bullpen, I'd have a lot more hope about their playoff push. But right now, the guys that have appeared the most out of the pen are all below average major league pitchers out of the bullpen. And Lucas Sims and Sean Doolittle, they're just not what you need in modern major league baseball to have sustained success. You're going to give up too many leagues. You're going to hemorrhage runs late in games. And that's really been their number one problem. And it's a problem that I just simply don't see them fixing.
Yeah, and there's Rockies have more issues than the Reds, but the reliance on bad bullpen arms is one that that I talked to Locked On host there, Jeff, the last time the Rockies and Reds met up. And the Reds seem to rely on Doolittle a lot, yet he's not that good. Why is it just because he's just a consistent person that they have the most confidence in right now? They seem to turn to him a lot, yet he's got a high ERA. He seems to not have the best control on the ball. Not the best. Is that just the best option that's right there for the team right now?
You asked David Bell that. I mean, this is another thing is that you have a big giant question mark in the manager position, which has been a big giant question mark with starting with Brian Price on to David Bell. And the Castellinis have only got one hire right since they bought the team, right? When they first bought the team, they had a fire manager midseason. Like this is just the type of organization that they formed into is not what Reds fans thought was going to happen at the beginning of the decade. And so you have a lot of questionable decisions where I would love to explain to you why Sean Doolittle gets as much reps as he gets, because I'd rather a young bullpen guy get more of those innings. And the problem with the Reds bullpen too is you're starting to have guys like Hembree make appearances. They're going real deep. And when you don't have a lot of depth and you're going deep, it makes the problem worse and worse and worse. And it compounds on itself. So you ask David Bell, you ask the pitching staff why some of these guys are getting as much run as they have. If I had to guess, it's that he's a little more reliable, as in he's going to have more good outings and then get shelled every once in a while. Instead of a guy that's in there, you're like, okay, I have no idea what's going to happen, to where they're always going to walk a guy and give up one or two runs. But when you're in the situation you're in with the Cincinnati Reds, I don't know who to put out there either to have success. And it goes back to, wow, wouldn't it be nice to have a guy that saved 40 games before and a guy who was your setup man last year for a team that made the playoffs? Would it be nice to have those two arms in that you didn't have to get rid of for the Cincinnati Reds? And that's basically the number one thing that Reds fans are now grasping onto that they didn't really grasp onto before the season. Man, if we would have known that Winker and Castellanos were MVPs, we would have made much different moves with that bullpen. And it's just kind of sad because they went for it, big free agent signing, and then the pandemic happened, and now they're immediately back to being a small market franchise. And it just feels like there's a big giant window that should have been opened that was immediately slammed shut on all of the people in Cincinnati's fingers. And that's why they can't put any seats in the ballpark. They had a reopening day, Paul, and they could barely fill it. Right? As soon as Wrigley Field was full capacity, 42,000 roaring fans. And the enthusiasm in Cincinnati it's really worrying me. And I think it's worrying ownership too, because they've done a lot and yet they can't get people back in the ballpark.
And that's got to be worrisome. Cincinnati in baseball, I mean, that's history right there. There's no team with a more historic, especially something like an opening day, a reopening day. You'd imagine it after the pandemic and Cincinnati, the thing that they'd want to do is fill the ballpark again. But it has kind of been tough sledding for the Reds for a while. Most of my tenure, if not all of my tenure in Ohio, they struggled for the time that I was there. And they, like I said, there seems to be pieces, but Rockies fans can relate to a contention window being slammed shut on their fingers as we're going through right now. The Reds have looked pretty darn good against the Rockies, at least taking 2 of 3 so far. We're going to dive into that and lots more with Lucas Moore. But before we get to that, stonks, memes, rocket ships, day trading can be a lot of fun. But if you want to grow your long-term wealth and make it to the moon, you should open up a Wealthfront investment account today. Decades of data show that investors that trade individual stocks underperform the market every year. In fact, only 1% of day traders beat the market. The odds are not in your favor if you're doing it alone. Team up with Wealthfront instead. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. Wealthfront can create a portfolio of globally diversified, low-cost index funds personalized for just for you in minutes. All you need is $500 to get started. Grow your wealth the easy way and let Wealthfront do the work for you. To get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. That's WEALTHFRONT.com/lockedonMLB to start growing your savings. Go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB and get started today. Lucas, you mentioned that this team needs bullpen arms, and it's 500 ball right now. Is it worth it to go out and do something at the deadline for this Reds team? Is it a better approach? Would they potentially approach the Rockies for a Trevor Story rental and maybe a John Gray, maybe some even go a little bit bigger for a starter from the Rockies in terms of a trade? Do you see the Reds doing anything before the deadline?
If anything, I'd see them adding a R.G. Goodwin, Rossiel Iglesias level reliever. They don't want to give up a lot because the World Series window is not open with this team. You cannot, I mean, just go to the reference page, hit ERA plus, and you can look at the, this is not, if you're expecting Wade Miley to go on the bump in game one of a playoff series against the, listen, the National League has the three best teams in baseball, arguably.
Yeah.
Right? Those are the teams you're going to have to contend against. You're going to have to beat the Dodgers. You're going to have to beat the Padres. I don't think this team is ready to compete even with the Cubs. So would I take a shot at a big-time bullpen arm? Yeah, because this ownership group has got to win now. It's getting really stale. I would take a shot. But if you look at their preseason actions, Paul, it just doesn't seem like it's going that way. Mm-hmm. I think that they're just going to kind of roll through this season, be a fun 500 team that can really hit. And if, cross your fingers, if Luis Castillo gets back on a Cy Young path that he was on, you know, maybe you can end up at 85, 86, 87 wins. And then you say, hey, we had a winning year. We'll add some pieces to the offseason. Look at this Hunter Green kid coming up through the minor leagues. Isn't he really exciting? And that's kind of how they're going to sell it. Mm-hmm. For me, I wouldn't have never dumped two bullpen arms until at least you see what you have, right? See which batters make a jump. See what the 60-game sample size was. I would have never made a move like that. But two, yeah, with this current roster, I'd be willing up to give up some low-level prospects, mid-level prospects, just to try to add some juice and some arms and some competition in the bullpen to see maybe if you can get a little run going to maybe help an offense that coalesces around two really big bats and some starters that figure themselves out to make a second half run. Mm-hmm. The ingredients are certainly there. And most metrics say 7% chance for the Reds to make the playoffs. That's probably where I'd put it too. About a 7% chance. Right around there. And if they don't make a move, I'd say probably 4 or 3% chance. But I would just add a mid-level. I wouldn't go for somebody like John Gray. I don't know what you guys are looking for in terms of Gray, but I just don't think the Reds are in any type of position to be giving up any sort of prospects for the future, because the World Series window for this team is when Hunter Green is pumping 103 as the ace. Mm-hmm. That's when the World Series window opens. And that's kind of their, and when you pay a guy the biggest signing bonus in number one pick history, or I think he was number one or two. It's the biggest signing bonus in Major League history for a draftee. When you do that, that's kind of your long-term plan. Okay, this is going to be our, like the Nationals with Steven Strasburg. I mean, you remember all the hype with him. So when Hunter Green gets there, for me as an organization, that would be my plan moving forward. Okay, how do we formulate this team to where Hunter Green is the ace? We've got him 7 years of team control. We've got these great hitters and we can formulate a team around it. And that just means if you go down, that means Wade Miley's not a part of this. Sonny Gray's not a part of this. Jeff Hoffman's probably not a part of this. Maybe Tyler Molle is. Maybe Luis Castillo is. So that's, to me, is just where the Reds organization's head is at. Mm-hmm. And their actions over the last year have kind of proven that.
Right.
So hopefully they prove me wrong and take a big swing, but I'm not even sure it's worth it because, you know, you tell me, Paul, is this team good enough to compete with the Padres or the Dodgers? I just don't think that's even in the realm of possibility. They couldn't compete with, if you give Trevor Bauer back to the Reds and had the Reds and Dodgers play in a series, the Dodgers would still be significant favorites.
Yep.
The thing is, the Dodgers have Trevor Bauer.
Yep.
So it's just, when you're looking at that type of competition and the situation you're in, I just don't think they're buyers.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, it's like you're kind of preaching to the choir in the sense of the Dodgers. I mean, the Rockies have to see the Dodgers all year, and it's just a constant reminder of the two different levels, especially this year. That wasn't the case in the playoff years, especially when the Rockies were one game away and a tiebreaker from winning the division for the first time, other than the Dodgers. The Rockies had finally put together a team that was competitive, but yeah, it's just simply not the case this year. Every time the Rockies have played the Dodgers, the Giants, or the Padres this year, it's just a clear two completely different levels of organization. So you've watched at least this stuff and you've seen the stuff in the off season. What from your outlook, what as a Reds fan, what do you think of the Colorado Rockies? What, like when you see the off season, when you hear the perception of the other team and you see, and you've watched the Reds and the Rockies now match up twice this year. What is your mindset on the Colorado Rockies?
I really think they're a similar organization in terms of market size, enthusiasm. The city is turning. Now, this was a recent development for Cincinnati. Cincinnati's, because of Joe Burrow, is a Bengals town now.
Right.
Denver, much more of a Broncos town, and that's kind of from John Elway, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it was before John Elway. I don't know if the Rockies were more popular then. Well, when
no,
the
it was 90s, and so it would be
exactly,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Rockies have never existed in a pre-John.
There was
the, you know, the Denver Bears and the, you know, the legacy ball there, but nothing in terms of Major League Baseball.
Well, so they're a team in a ballpark where the ball flies out. The Reds for a little different reasons than you guys up there in the mountains. But the ball flies out of the ballpark. They usually find a way to have pretty good lineups. They have a few years where they can contend. And they just never seem to put it together. In terms of this year and the Rockies' actions, I feel like that you guys are just a victim of the NL West right now. And I think organizationally, you would be silly to try to take swings at the Giants in the NL West right now. That's why I have not criticized the Rockies. In terms of all the bad teams in baseball, which the Rockies, I think anybody listening to this podcast can humbly say, are among the bad teams in baseball, which is okay.
We're loud and proud about that. We own it.
So the Rockies are a much better bad team than the, let's say, the Detroit Tigers. The Detroit Tigers get to play the Royals, who sometimes they just, the Royals aren't great. Neither are the Twins. The Twins have completely imploded. The Indians can't hit the ball. They've been no hit twice, right? I know another team was no hit twice, and we got the sticky tack situation going on. But like in that AL Central, it's embarrassing for the Tigers to be as bad as they are. They're horrific. In the NL West, like, can you really fairly judge the Colorado Rockies when they are making front office moves and actions looking at what's turned into three absolute giants?
Mm-hmm.
Literally one giant.
Yeah. One of them specifically.
Specifically is the Giants. And then you have the Dodgers and Padres. And those teams have spent at such a level and developed at such a level and have risen to such a height that if I'm a Rockies fan, honestly, I should sit back and say, if there's any time to be bad, it's probably this year, right? Because wouldn't it be horrible if you guys had invested and taken a big swing and you keep Arenado and you're spending all this money and you finish in fourth place because the division's that awesome, right? At least you're in a position to where you can remold the organization. And then when the giants of the division come down, you can step back in as a mid-market team and be competitive.
Yeah, you make a lot of good points, and I think it's a good mentality, and it's nice to hear, I think, an outside perspective to kind of mend the wounds, because honestly, the trade in my mind, it's still very fresh. Austin Gomber, though, however, has been great over his last few starts, but it still isn't the same without the team. It's just, I think the Rockies were there to compete with these teams. If just a couple of different moves, stemming even before Nolan,
You keep a DJ LeMahieu, and then you actually go after some free agents instead of, don't sign Daniel Murphy to play first base. Actually go out and find a decent enough, find a CJ Krohn. I mean, even if the Rockies had CJ Krohn in the situation they were in, they'd still be fine, because he's pretty dang, he's all right defensively. And when he's hitting, he's going to be all right. And he doesn't need to be the hitter. The Rockies brought him on this year, and I think actually last year too, to be like a more power hitting first baseman, which they have severely lacked since Todd Helton. And if you just had him instead of a Daniel Murphy, instead of an Ian Desmond, just a couple of different pieces, and actually looked and just embraced a little bit more of the analytics, I think the Rockies would be right up in there and be an exciting team with them, led by Arenado, Story, and LeMahieu there in the infield with, you know, you still got Charlie Blackmon in there in right field, and he's still swinging the bat well. He's not good on defense, but he still swings the bat pretty well. I mean, they'd be an exciting Rockies team, but I think you put it into a good perspective for Rockies fans. And this is a good time to rebuild. It's just, now we have to see if Dick Monfort, the owner of the Rockies, is going to go outside of the organization and actually embrace change, or if he's just going to keep on doing what he's been doing with his ownership of the team.
Well, this is the problem with the business of baseball, Paul, is they, oh my God, they need a salary cap. And I know there's a lot of purists and a lot of purists listen to Locked On, but the number one complaint I've heard from mid-market owners, and I talked to a couple while I was covering the Reds for WATH, unfortunately all off the record, but they all said the salary cap is the number one thing we need, or we will only be able to compete. So an organization that is the Reds or the Rockies size, they're similar size in terms of the revenue they bring in, all that good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Organizations of that size in the current model of baseball can only compete for World Series genuinely every 3 or 4 years while making a profit.
Right.
That's it. You the business, because to compete, you've got to compete with $300 million in payroll. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of it. When you've got a team that was the best team, arguably, in my opinion, in terms of raw construction for 5 straight years, and then they get to add an organization's first ever Cy Young winner in the offseason without taking away any of their pieces, you have found yourself a significant problem. That's a significant problem.
Right.
And baseball is in, just like a lot of the rest of the world, it's all kind of getting tilted to where you've got a couple really great things at the top and then a couple like, oh, what's going on down here? And you need a salary floor, because the Pittsburgh Pirates have a payroll less than some law firms in the country at $45 million. That $45 million is the number if you count their minor leaguers.
That's insane. And they still swept the Rockies.
They're interesting. They're you know, JT Brubaker, Springfield native. But the thing about, you can't have an organization spending $315 million in payroll and another spending $45 across their entire organization and expect your product to be fair and expect your product to be balanced. And that's the problem, is you have this great conversation. Oh, they should have done this, that, and that. And if it were the Denver Broncos, they would have. Why? Yep. Because they compete in the same salary realm, right? The reason the Cincinnati Bengals can win the division once every 3 years, even though the Steelers, Ravens, and now the Browns just outclass them as organizations by miles, is because they can spend about the same money every year.
Right.
Right. They're limited. It's fair. It makes it better for fan bases. There needs to be more like revenue. It's just, baseball's got to change a lot if they want that type of competitive balance. And that's why whenever mid-market teams like you and I are covering have conversations like this, we're like, well, they should have done this, that, and that. But the ownership's like, well, why would I do that, lose money, and then we still finish in third?
Yeah.
And they're not willing to take the risk, you know?
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. It's just one of those scratching things where the Rockies do spend all this money on Nolan Arenado, and then they just proceed to do nothing. But they, I guess maybe from the business side, they must have seen something in the waters after the collapse of the second half of the 2019 year going into the pandemic.
The pandemic killed everybody. It killed everybody that wasn't the Dodgers.
Right. Yeah. I that's the thing. But I think the Rockies do get a benefit. I think more people love Coors Field and going to games, so I don't always cut the slack of they're bigger than they give themselves credit for. And Dick Monfort in the offseason saying, calling themselves a small market team and they can't get the free agents, I just don't buy into that. I just don't see a veteran player that isn't super strong, you know, not like they're, because they take chances on vets all the time, but you're going to tell me that there aren't people that are excited to come hit at Coors Field? Like, I just don't buy that. And it's especially if you're not an outfielder and you don't have to deal with the crazy outfield. Like, if you're a first baseman, like, I just feel like a first baseman and catchers would have to love to come there, because in reality, you know, a lot of balls are going to be in play as a catcher. So, you know, hopefully you're not working too much, depending on it is. But then if you're playing first base, you just play first base, be a good enough defender, and then you can just go and you're hitting the cores half the season. That's just some of the stuff I don't buy. But I think you got a good point there, Lucas. But we're going to get ready to just give our final thoughts on the series. And I know we could go a lot more, Lucas. We'll have to do this again, and I'm sure we will. But before we do,
I talk long.
That's what we get paid to do. That's what we're good at. But I got to tell you about the best tasting protein bar ever, and that is Built Bar. Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, and they got coconut, almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel. There is something for everyone. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. Most of the flavors, they got 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. Order today, get that raspberry or mint brownie, whatever you would like. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKED15. That's promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off builtbar.com. Promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off builtbar.com. And of course, every sport is in full swing, just about. I mean, football's on the way, but there's so much sports action. Make sure that you are keeping up to date with the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. That is Bet Online. Bet Online, it is where you can go to get all the latest news, odds, and info for your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, fun fact, actually, to go into this, Lucas and I attended the same school that Logan Paul went to for a year, if you were getting in on all the betting for that. I actually saw him. That was before you, though, right?
That was before me.
Yeah,
he was simply a myth.
Yes, the myth there. But yeah, I think we were freshmen at the same time. That fight night, that's what had me thinking about that. But anyway, for the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbooks experts. Remember, promo code Locked On. Lucas, before we go, I know we were going to wrap up the series, but let's be honest. The Reds out-hit the Rockies. Kyle Freeland looked bad. The Reds love the long ball. The bullpen's not good for either team. The Reds are in a much better place than the Rockies. Rockies going to be historically bad on the road. I got it. You mentioned on 3 a.m. Coney, where you can find Lucas, also at the Cincy Chronicle, and also the West Side. What was it? What's the other one for the Chicago-based stuff?
Oh, on the shore. That one's a little less regular.
But
it's still, we've got a website for it, ontheshorepod.com. We do some Chicago sports stuff whenever we get the opportunity to. I got a lot of different roles. So, you know,
you and me,
for that one every other week. So,
yeah. I mean, Lucas has traveled all over the country calling a variety of sports. I mean, he called Joe Burrow in high school on us. That's one of the big things we got to see. It was Joe Burrow in high school, where we went to college, and Lucas got to cover and follow him throughout high school. But Lucas, keeping it within the Reds theme here, I saw on Twitter the other day, you posted, there was one of those classic things that appear every like 5 weeks, I feel like, of post your opinion that does this to you, and it's like a meme from somewhere, and it was Patrick from SpongeBob, and you said Dusty Baker should never have been fired. Why is that? What do you think Dusty Baker would bring to the Reds, and why do you think he would still be a good fit for the Reds right now?
Here's the thing about being a baseball manager. I have managed middle school baseball. I've also been an assistant coach for multiple high school teams. I've done that stuff. I've been on the bus for college teams. I've done scouting and analytics for summer collegiate teams. I could go in there, write the lineup, make the pitching changes for a major league club just as good as any of these guys. In fact, most of you that listen to this podcast that are huge baseball fans, you could probably do about the same job writing the lineup. And make, if that were your full-time job to look at numbers and talk to guys and write a lot, you could do that. That's not what being a manager is about. Being a manager is about being a manager, as in you have to control and know and relate to and get the most of the men in your locker room. That's what being a baseball manager is nowadays. You don't need an analytics guy. You have a whole analytics team, right? You don't need a guy that's diving into the stats and is really, no, that's what the front office is for. You want to hand them stat sheets and say, okay, this is what I'm looking at today. But you need your manager to know the players, their ins and outs, when their family's going sideways, when things aren't right at home, when they look tired coming into work that day. You need to be able to talk to them, get them to be honest with you. Hey, do you need rest? Are you ready to go? Do you need pulled in this situation? I mean, I think Mike Schilt's not doing a great job in St. Louis, and we see that as the season's going along. They're starting to really fall apart. And a huge example of this was when they were playing at Wrigley. They had one of their pitchers, I believe, I'm forgetting the name, but he brought in his translator to beg to stay in the game, stayed in the game, and the next pitch was a home run. Mm. A great manager never lets that happen. He knows his player. He knows when he's lying. He knows when he's like, I'm going to stay in. Okay, you know, you got to come out. And there is no way to quantify it. There's no way to be analytical about it. There's no way to look at the numbers. But here's the bottom line. Baseball, and I'm sorry to say this, I love Bill James. I was one of the original readers of Moneyball. I was all over analytics, but everybody's got it now. So where does your advantage come? From being a manager, from managing people, from getting the most out of individuals. That's where success comes from, and that's what Dusty Baker has been great at every stop in his career, is getting the most out of the team until they get to the postseason. Because then what Dusty does in the postseason is he's lost so many postseason series because of Steve Bartman. That's what people in Chicago would say, is that it was Bartman's fault. The reason that Dusty Baker, now every time Dusty Baker gets in the postseason, he overmanages. Why? Because he's trying to like force the win.
Right.
And instead of just letting it happen. And postseason baseball is essentially luck half the time anyway.
Truly. I
mean, you play 162 and then you play a 5-game series. Like, it's a lot of luck and starting pitching and did this
and momentum at the end of the year. I mean, exactly, baseball is so much at the who is hot at the end of the year.
And Dusty Baker, well, one, if they would have hired somebody that was actually competent after him, maybe I wouldn't have this opinion. But the two hires after Dusty Baker have been abysmal: Brian Price and David Bell. And they just haven't gotten the most out. The fact Luis Castillo, who has some of the best natural stuff I've ever seen of any Reds pitcher, I mean, deadly stuff. How does he have a 6.6 ERA? That's a failure on the Red staff for whatever happened. That's a failure on the staff. If you have a guy drop in performance that much, that means you didn't communicate the message right. You didn't change his game in the way it needed to be changed. And again, nothing I'm speaking of is quantifiable. But that's the thing about baseball, is for a century, we were like, this game's beautiful, because even though we have all these numbers, there's something about it that we just can't put our finger on. Mm-hmm. Now we're all pretending like we have all the answers. And frankly, the thing I'm most tired of in baseball is a bunch of nerds saying like, hey, that's stupid. This is stupid. That's stupid. When in certain situations, even though it's a 47% scenario, if you've looked in a guy's eyes and made a decision, even though it's 47-53, sometimes you make the 47% decision, right? I was watching this movie with Jim Parsons, this animated movie called Home. Right? This kid's movie about the Boov. And one of the really interesting things that I wanted to mention on this was, he said, the most interesting thing about humans is even when something isn't 50% likely, you still take a chance at it. Mm-hmm. Because you read a situation, you hold on to hope, you're able to analyze feelings and emotions and take advantage of them. And that's what makes humans different. And if you forget about the humanity in baseball, you will always fail. You will always fail.
And I think it's, you know, baseball, especially because of how mental it is, but sports in general, there's numbers, there is this, there's chemistry in that, but there is something to the humanity, the energy, the passion, the thing that every person who's played competitive sports feels. And like, I haven't been a part of very many special teams in terms of successful performance on the field, but you know, you have something special when something's going good and when the performance is good, just because, you know, in a small sample for me, when a win happens, you know that something's good. When you have momentum and you're beating teams that you shouldn't, and you know, or like on paper you shouldn't, there's so much of that to baseball. But Lucas, we could talk so much more, but we're going to wrap things up here. Thank you again so much for all your time. Cincy Chronicle, the 3 a.m. Coney, if you want to stay up to date with Lucas on Cincinnati sports. Before we go, today on the Locked On Today podcast, does a college football playoff expansion hurt Notre Dame? Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Lucas, before we go, we're Athens guys. We have to talk real quick. What Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, what are we thinking?
You should invest. Well, this is not financial advice, but BetOnline was a sponsor, so I'll just say this. Joe Burrow MVP odds are very good right now. $50,000
Coming back from an exploded knee, Joe Burrow odds are looking good.
Here's the thing. Like, here's the thing about the knee. It's healthy. And he is at 92% right now. And in fact, if there were a playoff game in the city of Cincinnati next week, Joe Burrow would be playing. He wouldn't be 100%, but that kid be playing. And we reported on the 3AM Coney that he'd be playing week one, week after the surgery. And that was coming from, we're from Athens. So I got plenty of people.
Right.
And there's a lot of talk that goes on in Athens. So if it's about Burrow, we know. And it's been week one this whole time. He has been throwing since early April. He's throwing on the run. His velocity has improved significantly. He's strengthened his hips. He's strengthened his shoulders. And he has not taken one day off of football. His parents begged him to take 2 days off to vacation in Florida. And his doctor said, yeah, you could take 2 days off rehab. He refused. He stayed in Cincinnati. He grinded. He's been grinding. He's focused on only football. And if you liked what you saw from Joe Burrow in the tougher half of their schedule, the first 10 games, I think with Ja'Marr Chase on the outside, the greatest combination in college football history, I think that a second year MVP, which has happened multiple times recently, I think that's a pretty good bet for Joe Burrow, especially at the odds they're at right now.
I'm excited for football because baseball has been a little tough, but we love talking baseball here on Locked On Rockies. I'm sure Lucas and I will cross paths again here. Lucas, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate it. And Rockies fans, hang in there. You guys will be fine.
One day.